Hi, this is Nevin Martell. We're talking with Jared Gummery from Chicago-based The Ponies. Their latest record, Celebration Castle, is out right now in your record stores or online somewhere on In the Red Records. And how are you doing today, Jared?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing peachy.
Good, good.
So where are we talking to you today?
Just at home, hanging out in Chicago. It's actually really nice here.
Yep.
Like weather-wise, for once.
I know. Finally. I actually flew over Chicago yesterday, and it looked gorgeous. So.
Yeah, it was like 80 degrees. It's nice.
And what are we doing inside talking on the phone? We're inside talking on the phone.
Yeah. I'm on my way out soon. So.
Okay. Well, let's just start by I wanted to talk about the fact that this record seems to have a little bit more swagger and a little bit more intention of shaking the hips than Laced with Romance did, and whether wanted to know whether that was intentional or whether that just kind of came out in the songwriting and recording process.
Probably not intentional. I don't know. Definitely just probably came out. You know, we had these are the songs we had to record, and that's what we had to work with. So.
Now, was this a specific set of songs that was written as a block, or did you find that this is stuff that's been pulled from a variety of sources?
Some of the songs are actually like older songs that we demoed, you know, like 4 years ago or something, and then some of them are just songs we wrote last year, probably actually before Laced with Romance even came out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit of everything, I guess.
And does it work for you as a suite of music, though? Like, when you kind of started assembling songs and things that you wanted to have on the record, did you find that you had to go back and write anything, or did you find that it just kind of naturally fit together as a whole LP?
I think this is kind of what we had to work with, you know. We were on tour last year, so it was really hard to write a whole bunch of new stuff, and luckily we had written, you know, good 6-7 songs before we even, like, left for tour, so we were, you know... It worked out, I guess, so I didn't know how it was going to work out, but it did.
Right.
So.
And why did the title Celebration Castle seem to sum it all up?
I don't know, just thought it was a hilarious name. Woke up one morning in a hotel room and heard it on the TV, so...
Ah, and what on the TV?
It's like a My Little Pony toy.
Wow.
So.
Rock experiences its first My Little Pony reference.
Yeah.
My little sister will be so excited. She'll probably be like, "Oh my god, I totally had that as a kid."
Well, we were having troubles like finding a name for, you know, that's like the hardest thing I think sometimes.
Sure.
And we had heard that commercial and thought it was like super hilarious and kept bringing it up. And then we were recording, like we told Albini like about the name and he thought it was really good. So we were like, "All right, we'll keep it."
Now, speaking of names, I was going to save this for later, but since you bring it up, I remember in like 2002, a band out of Portland, Maine, actually released a record under the moniker The Ponies as well.
Yes.
And I wanted to know, if it came to a tussle, who could take who?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think we're scrappers.
You're not scrappers,
I don't know.
You're not bruisers? No.
I am 6'5", so.
Right, I know.
But I don't know, you know. We had to, you know, take our name and stuff, so.
Sure, sure.
So, I think we won that battle, but, you know, I kind of was not a great situation, I don't know.
No.
I hated to have to be that guy.
No one wants to be that guy.
Yeah.
That's why we have lawyers.
Yeah, but I had to be that guy.
Now, you mentioned Albini before, and this record seems to have a fuller and kind of poppier sound than he's normally known for producing. What kind of led you to him, and what made you think that he was the guy for this record?
Well, a lot of it was, for me, I didn't want to leave Chicago and go record somewhere. We've been on tour, like, all year, and, you know, and then I was thinking, like, okay, who can record us here in Chicago? And that was, like, you know, obviously that's the first thing that pops in your head, and just, you know, went and listened to a bunch of records I had that he had worked on, and I was like, okay, I think this will be great, you know? So basically just called him, I called our label and asked if we could, you know, see if we can make it happen, and they were A-okay with that, so just called up the studio and went and toured it, and it's a really beautiful studio and awesome equipment and everything, so.
Now, what was the recording process like? Did you do it in one of his, like, marathon weekend sessions, or was it a little bit more drawn out?
I think we spent about 5 days there, and split up, like, we tracked everything and then came back and mixed, so it wasn't too bad, actually. I mean, we practiced, we were really prepared. It wasn't a thing where, you know, we went in there and wrote the album, you know.
Right.
So basically just went in there and, you know, he captured what was going on, so.
And did you have any kind of specific, like, sonic trickery that you wanted him to kind of bring to it? Or did he bring anything that you hadn't expected out of the songs?
If he did, I probably didn't know what he was doing, you know? really, I just wanted to get it recorded really well, you know? Just have an awesome recording, and I think that's, you know, what happened.
And, you know, you said you wanted to be kind of specific to Chicago for the recording. Like, do you feel that the city has bled into the record? Do you go back and listen to it and say, you know, this is a record that sounds definitely like Chicago now?
I don't know. I don't think it, you know. I mean, I love living here. Like, I've lived here for a long time, and I don't know. I'd rather support people in my own town than, you know. You know, just hometown pride, I guess.
Sure, sure.
So, you know, and a lot of it was seriously, like, I didn't want to travel anywhere. And, like, you know, we just, like, when we recorded our first record, you know, we did it in Detroit. And we didn't, you know, we were sleeping on floors and stuff and staying up all night. And it was just, like, a really kind of difficult, you know, it went fine for the first record. But
sure.
I didn't think my body could take it for the second one.
Now, you know, as I was listening back to it a couple of days ago, I was kind of thinking that sonically and, you know, songwriting-wise, it seems to really fit into, well, what's coming out of the UK these days, kind of like Bloc Party, Maximo Park kind of vein. And I was wondering kind of who you considered your contemporaries were.
Nowadays?
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. I mean, a lot of the bands I listen to, most people don't really, aren't very popular, you know. I don't really know too many bands from the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I like this band a lot called the Grigri, G-R-I-S, G-R-I-S, and, but I don't think we sound anything like them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, mostly, like, I just consider my contemporaries my friends, you know, like, bands we play with and stuff like that, so.
Sure. Were you listening to kind of anything in specific when you were doing the songwriting for the record, or when you listen back to it, do you find that, like, specific things that you've listened to in the past bled into it?
You know, probably definitely. I mean, when we're in the van all day, we listen to so much stuff. It's, you know, amazing.
Right.
But, you know, I don't think anything specific, you know.
What's the guilty pleasure in the van? What record do you put on that no one would ever want to admit they listen to? But
oh, recently, it's I really like the new Gwen Stefani record.
Ah, there you go.
That's a pretty good guilty pleasure. But
that is indeed a very guilty pleasure.
Yeah. We also listen to a lot of 50 Cent mm-hmm. on this tour, so I don't know.
Are you keeping it real, though, is the question.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, I'm a big lyric guy, and I kind of wanted to ask about some of the lyrics on the record. Glass Conversation, then. Interesting title. What did it come out
of? Basically, like, when I first moved to Chicago, I lived in the uptown neighborhood, and there was this diner that I used to frequent, and there was always this, like, crazy old lady, like, talking to herself in the reflection of the glass, so
kind of
inspired by that.
Speaking of another title, I wanted to know what the difference was between a discoteca, a discotheque, and and just a mere disco.
Oh, I'm not quite sure. Our neighborhood now is, like, highly Hispanic, so all the record stores here are called discotecas. I don't speak any Spanish, but...
So you just, do you find, like, when you look back at your lyrics that, like, kind of just a lot of, it seems from the last couple of answers, that a lot of just kind of, like, everyday Chicago life is kind of spilled into them?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's a lot of my influence, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, I really like living here. It's a pretty crazy place, so.
Now, was there any song that you set out to write kind of a more specific subject? You know, there was something, like, specific that you had in mind. It was less kind of just thinking of, where you lived and what you saw. Was, you know, did you ever sit down and say, I want to write our love song or, you know, our sad ballad or, you know?
Yeah, I don't really do that. A lot of my music our music is just like, you know, I come up with the music first and then we, you know, work on lyrics later.
Have you found that the way that you guys write music has kind of evolved since you did the last record? You know, I know you said that everything was ready by the time you went into the studio, but, were you writing differently? Were you coming up with the sounds differently?
Not particularly. I mean, most of our writing's done in the rehearsal space. You know, somebody will come in and have, like, a little part and maybe, like, a vocal pattern or something and be like, help, you know, and then, you know, we just kind of work on it and work on it and work on it until it becomes a song.
What was the hardest one for you guys to get down, the one that you kept having the idea for the sound for but just couldn't get down?
I don't know. Like, everything kind of went pretty smooth in this recording session. Like, it was actually a lot easier than I thought it would be. Yeah, nothing was really too difficult. You know, like the song "Get Black," mm-hmm. it's kind of hard. It's a lot of vocals, so like for mm-hmm. me to sing it straight through, it's like it's a voice wrecker. Mm-hmm. But yeah, everything went pretty smoothly.
Now,
surprisingly.
Was it done mostly live, or did you have to go back and do any extensive overdub?
All the basic music was done live, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm not one to sit there and make it perfect, you know.
Right.
And then we overdub, obviously, like guitars and
sure.
extra guitars.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some keyboards, and all the vocals were overdubbed.
When are there too many guitars? At what layer of guitars do you finally think that it's too many?
I don't know. I like guitars.
Now, have you had a chance to start playing some of these songs out live? And if so, how have they kind of evolved from the studio versions?
Yeah, we did. We started playing a lot of them out live, and I think it's going pretty good, you know? The only rough part is, like, people don't have the record yet, so they're like, what are these songs? But, yeah, it's been going pretty good. They sound a little bit, you know, I think probably a little bit sloppier and a little bit louder, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So...
And are they fitting in well with the stuff from Laced with Romance and, like, you know, some of the earlier singles and stuff?
I think so, yeah. I mean, we played a lot of the songs, like, last year. You know, a couple of the songs last year we played Glass Conversation a lot and Shadowbox,
mm-hmm.
so... it's good. I don't know, for us, like, it's hard to, you know, play the same songs off one record every night, you know?
Sure.
For, you know, 5 months in a row, so... I like to throw in some new ones here and there and mix it up a little bit.
Definitely. Now, for someone who hasn't seen a pony show, would you say that the crowd is made up of head bobbers, arm crossed people, dancers, pogoers, moshers? What? What kind of a reaction do you think that the typical ponies fan has?
Maybe a mix of all. Not too much moshing.
No.
I've seen that happen a couple times, though.
No crowd surfing up to the front?
No. I don't know. I think people just, you know, watch our music, you know. Watch us play. Nothing really too rowdy.
Mm-hmm. Now,
but it kind of depends where you're at. You know, if we're playing on the floor in a really tiny bar, like, you know, people are more likely to get a little crazy. Whereas you're, you know, playing on a stage in a really big club, it's a little different vibe. Especially when they have like 300-pound security guys staring at them.
Sure. But you know what? Those guys are always the gentlest, nicest guys in the club once you get to know them.
Yeah.
Heart of gold, that Harry. Heart of gold.
Sometimes.
Now, you know, I have a kind of a set of stock questions that I like asking people just to kind of see where they've come from. And the first one is, do you remember the first album that you bought, LP, tape, record, CD?
That I've brought personally, I don't know. I think the first tape I remember receiving is my mom bought me Rat Out of the Cellar.
What a great record.
Yeah.
That had Round and Round, right?
My cousin stole it. So, it didn't last long, but
no.
Yeah. I don't know. That's one that I remember. So.
And obviously your music has been profoundly influenced by hair metal in the later
definitely.
Years. Next question, what's the first show that you had a chance to see?
Another one, my mom took me to see the Oak Ridge Boys.
Ooh, another profound later life influence.
Yeah, I'm from Central Illinois, so.
What was that like?
It wasn't bad. I like the guy that has the low voice, you know, the tenor guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was funny, but I remember sitting through the opening band and, like, begging to go home. So.
Like so many things our parents make us do.
Yeah.
You know?
It was, like, straight up really bad country.
Oh, man. I'm in upstate New York right now, and they love their Brooks and Dunn and Big and Cash or whatever they're called. And, yeah, it's a scary, scary scene, that country scene. The next question would be, in high school, what was the band that changed your world?
Whew, in high school?
Or junior high, you know, like the first band that, like, you know, you profoundly identified with.
I mean, it probably had to be like Misfits or something, you know? Misfits, Sex Pistols, Dead Kennedys, any sort of like punk rock hardcore stuff.
Sure.
So, I was definitely into skating and stuff, and those bands were pretty awesome to me back then, still are.
Yeah.
Still have all those records, so.
Sure.
I won't go see the new Misfits, but.
No. Now, was that kind of music readily available, or was that kind of something that you had to really seek out where you were living at the time?
Actually, it wasn't bad. I mean, we had some really great record stores in Bloomington Normal for some reason. And, it's pretty readily available.
There you go. This is a more locale-oriented question. What's where's your favorite place to go out in Chicago?
To go out?
Yeah, either you can name one for a drink and one for live music.
Hmm. Well, I think definitely for live music, I like the Empty Bottle. It's a really intimate place. It's fairly, you know, decent size. They have really cheap drinks, and the bartenders are really nice there. And so I like that place. As far as just getting a beer or something, I don't know. There's so many, like, little neighborhoody corner bars here. You know, I also go to Empty Bottle just to have drinks a lot because they're so cheap there. So.
Love those dollar Pabst Blue Ribbons.
Yeah, I think they upped it to $1.75 now, but it's still good. There's also a really great place downtown called Cal's.
Mm-hmm.
And they have bands there. It holds like 60 people. It's sold out. You play on the floor. Beers are $1.50. You can drink out on the sidewalk in the summer.
That's great.
Pretty cool because downtown in that area is kind of dead at night because it's all business. But that bar is there, so you know you can sit there, have a beer on the sidewalk, and look at the Sears Tower. So,
what's your latest recommendation out of Chicago in terms of band or record?
I really like this band called Mahjong.
Mm-hmm.
From here, and they're kind of a definitely characters. Their music is just insane, like kind of electronic, kind of poppy, kind of just all over the place. And you know, at some point, it's almost like dance music, like you know, electronic dance music, but they make it all organically somehow.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really entertaining. I think they'll, you know, I'm sure they'll be on tour everywhere. So.
Excellent. Well, Jared, man, thank you so much for taking time out today, and I appreciate you being so understanding earlier.
Yeah, that's good, good.
But enjoy the rest of your sunny Chicago day.
Okay, I will, and have a good day to you.
Indeed, I look forward to seeing you guys in New York.
Okay, cool, man.
Cheers.
Bye.
Nevin Martell is a full-time freelance writer based in New York City. He regularly contributes to Giant, Filter, and Flaunt magazines. He's the author of Beck, The Art of Mutation, and Dave Matthews Band, Music for the People. You can find him on the web at www.stairwaytonevin.com.